VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 515, recorded on September 24th, 2018.
The 515th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 349th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
So last week we did the episode, but for whatever reason I got nothing and it was too late to salvage anything, so I'm just going to do this over again. I mean, there's more important news this week anyway. Last week we had some game updates like Tales of Vesperia, you know, being remastered, which I know a lot of people are excited about. And what else did we talk about? There was another game that was announced that was coming out, and I'm trying to remember what it was. It got that also had people excited as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, Rumble Roses XX was Xbox backwards compatible. That was it. Hey, you're the expert on all fighting games. You remember Rumble Roses, don't you?
Of course I do. I didn't know it was backwards compatible now.
Yeah. It was very important that it become backwards compatible. Actually, one game was recently announced as backwards compatible, which I am ecstatic about, and that is the 2008 Prince of Persia. And the thing is that's going to be next week's gaming flashback. That game was so good. And so underappreciated.
It didn't make the news, and it's not something that big of a deal. But I think Sega announced that they're remastering Resonance of Fate. This is one that comes from that age that you love, Jonah, the age of Xbox 360 JRPGs. This game to me was what Blue Dragon is to you. And it's basically like a John Woo JRPG where like you have three characters and it's like grid map and sort of turn based, but like every turn you attack, your character basically runs in a line and you have to choose which enemies you attack with gunplay, and it's basically gun ballet in a JRPG, and it's very.
Okay, have you ever played Stranglehold?
Yeah, but this is like a JRPG if John Woo directed it.
But John Woo is actually in Stranglehold.
Uh-huh.
Actually, the one that we were talking about was the modders making New Vegas for Fallout 4.
I mean, that's my favorite of the Fallout games. I'm happy to see them put that back together, and I've seen the video clips of like some of the gameplay. It looks cool.
Yeah, I actually reinstalled it on Steam, and I just realized, you know what? I have every single piece of Fallout DLC. I did get the special edition on Humble Bundle, so mm-hmm. I'll be able to enjoy all of that stuff, including your favorite Honest Hearts DLC.
Yeah, I love the Burned Man. He's so burned, and man,
he's so baked, man. Yeah, I mean, we're getting to that part of the year in which we're talking more and more about games rather than industry stuff. Unfortunately, this week we have some really heavy industry stuff. I told you I was really ecstatic about Prince of Persia, and I started playing it again. And you know what? It holds up. You know, for one thing, they used the cel-shaded graphics, so it looks timeless. You know, it's never going to age because it just looks like a cartoon.
Nice.
Right? And the music is some of the best you'll ever hear in any video games. As a matter of fact, when I did the Game Stooge Awards, it won Best Music over some pretty heavy competition. I also played Tennis World Tour, and dear God, it sucks. I mean, it is really bad. It is, I don't care if it looks like a PS2 game, you know, but it is so sluggish and clunky, you know? I mean, that's something that's missing right now. I mean, the last good tennis game was Top Spin 4, and that was 2011. Mm-hmm. Which is not backwards compatible on Xbox One, by the way.
now pretty much the only games that we have are Mario Tennis Aces and pretty much any other Mario Tennis games that comes out.
Yeah, but
which that doesn't have arcade-y.
Yeah, and it doesn't have a career mode. It's not like you can have, you know, you can have your guy work and try and get into Wimbledon, that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it knows tennis. I mean, there are several buttons, like one is for lob, one is for, you know, backhand, and all that stuff. But it is so clunky and just bad. It's like an alpha of a game. And it's really disappointing because, you know, of all the sports out there, you'd think tennis would get more love, but it doesn't. I mean, there's more rugby games, new rugby games out there than there is tennis and cricket. Which, you know, I know there are people who are fans of those games, but, you know, tennis is literally a worldwide sport.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it should get the same amount of love that FIFA does. So how about you, TJ? What have you been playing?
So I busted out a Guilty Pleasure game.
Guilty Gears.
No. I jumped.
Well, hell, you know, that's literally a Guilty Pleasure game.
I jumped into the Fist of the North Star Lost Paradise demo. And,
okay.
I am a
fan. Man who makes people explode by punching them in the chest.
Yes.
Or explode a couple of minutes later.
Or poking their face and, or poking their back or kicking them. He just makes them explode no matter what he does.
Not a fan of a bunch of hero people. It's just, come on.
It's the original over the top, just like ridiculous anime that, like, always.
Well, it started out as a manga.
Right. But, like, they crank it up to 11 so much in that anime. And then in the game is made by the same people who made the Yakuza series. So it's gonna be a little bit of open world, but it's also gonna be a big old action brawler. And boy, howdy, did they get it right. I love
what does it say when a series just makes Naruto look, you know, tame? Conservative and moderated.
Mm-hmm. That's saying something.
Yeah, it is ridiculously and shamelessly my favorite as far as like old anime goes, just as far as just like, it's so bad, it's good seeing everything that you can do in that game. And I'm excited. It's going to come out in early October. I think I'm going to have to jump into that one just as like a PUD killing time game.
One Piece. I take back everything bad I ever said about you. So, Scott, we know what you've been playing.
Yes, I've been playing Dragon's Quest 11, and I've gotten pretty far into the game. I'm pretty sure I'm over halfway through it. It's sort of had a Final Fantasy VI moment, which I actually really enjoy.
Not a Final Fantasy VII moment, right? No one died.
No. Six. Six. Not seven, not five, six.
Wait, let me ask you a question. Now, was Final Fantasy VI, Final Fantasy II in the U.S.?
Final Fantasy III.
It's screwed up numbering.
Yeah, it was really screwed up. It was stupid. I don't know. Well, they felt that 5 was too hard for us, I guess, which is ridiculous. Well,
that's Super Mario Brothers 2, you know, became the lost levels eventually.
Yeah. I'm really enjoying it. I really like the characters, and I mean, this is really just nice sinking into a JRPG and getting into the characters and story and having fun mechanics to, just make the whole experience enjoyable.
You know, I'm thinking about that too hard thing. I mean, what would they have thought if they knew now that people would eat up Dark Souls and, you know, complain if it was too easy? You know?
Well, there were games that were very hard.
Yeah, I know, but they thought we Americans couldn't handle it. But, you know, Dark Souls is a genre now, you know. Yahtzee says, you know, he wants to crack his head against the wall over and over and over again.
I don't think there's been a Final Fantasy that comes anywhere near as difficult as Dark Souls, so that would be quite the change for them.
I mean, we have if you play XCOM 2, you know, you can look to play an incredibly hard version of it with Iron Man, which means anybody who dies, you can't save and reload, you know, you can only save and quit.
They actually do have challenges in Dragon's Quest that you can activate just for the bragging rights of, hey, I did this, where you can turn off stores, so you can't buy anything. You have to find your stuff to make armor. You can turn off, there's other stuff you can turn off too for added challenges to make the game harder. So there is that.
Yeah. So before we get into the gaming flashback, I think we should talk about one news item that isn't in the notes, but I think we should discuss, and that is how angry people are about Nintendo's new $20 online service.
Yeah. I mean,
that sounds about the same price as Sony's.
No, it's
less. Yeah. No, Sony's is $70, isn't it?
It's $60 for a year.
Plus? Oh.
But I mean, it's there's a lot of cons to it. And it's not the worst thing. Like, it's certainly something that can grow over the course of time. I mean, Xbox and PlayStation had a starting point too, but it feels weird that Nintendo is so bare bones when they had so many other models to look at when it came to this. I mean, for one thing, they're doing peer-to-peer connection on their internet service, which is just bad. Get your own servers.
And here's the thing, they're offering retro games, but you know, but you have the mini NES. Why would anybody even care about those games when you already have a mini NES? They'll just get that.
That's something I'm going to give a pass because they're going to build onto it, and eventually I'm hoping the rumor is true that they're going to add Super Nintendo games to it, which would, yeah, in my opinion, make that worth it.
Well, here's the thing. I have Xbox Live Gold. You know, I downloaded some games today, but I know if I leave Gold, guess what? I'm going to keep those games.
Yeah.
Here, you have to log on every week just to make sure that you're not a dirty cheater and you didn't somehow pirate those games from them.
Well, and the other one is that they have a thing where if your subscription expires and you've been using the cloud saves, you're shit out of luck. They'll delete your cloud saves and not keep them.
Yeah. Also, the cloud saves are not consistent.
And it's, yeah, I mean, like, some games will allow it and some games won't, because according to Nintendo, it deters cheaters. But I don't understand that. Like, who's cheating with cloud saves and how? I guess I'd need to research that just because I don't know about it, but it seems weird.
Yeah, and also, guess what? If you want to play Fortnite, you don't need friggin' Nintendo Switch Online. So it's not even consistent on that level.
Yeah. So, it's very bare bones. I guess you get what you pay for, because it is only like $20 for a year.
I don't think anybody thinks it's worth $20 in the first place, though.
They have time to make it worth it. I mean, people are gonna use it when Smash Bros. Ultimate comes out. That's just the fact.
Sony hasn't even gotten PSN right, and they've had, what, 10 years to try and fix that. You know, you either get it right the first time, or you never get it right. Or should I remind everybody about PlayStation Home?
Hmm.
You know, I mean, say what you want about Microsoft, they've always been software-oriented, while Sony and Nintendo have always been hardware-oriented. And Microsoft knows what they're talking about when it comes to software and online. You know, Sony is still learning. And Nintendo, it might as well be, I don't know, it's like some foreign creature that they can't possibly understand. You know, what they need to do is get some people who know about online systems and just let them work at it. But Nintendo, you know, from day one with friend codes, you know, they... unless, you know, and they say peer-to-peer, of course, because what they're made, you know, what they're most familiar with is doing a link between handhelds.
Yeah. It has a lot of early issues, and it's going to be, I mean, I'm into, I bought it at this point. I'm going to play Smash Bros. Ultimate, so I figured I might as well get on board. But we'll see what happens with it.
My advice is just to get a mini NES.
I can't play Smash Bros. Ultimate on mini NES. Oh. Jonah, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, sorry. My I don't know what happened.
Go ahead and be bothered.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I see. Fallout 3 is Fallout 3 is good God. Fallout 3 is a post-apocalyptic action role-playing open-world video game developed by Bethesda Game Studios and published by Bethesda Softworks. The third major installment of the Fallout series, it is the first game created by Bethesda since it bought the franchise from Interplay Entertainment. The game marks a major shift in the series by using 3D graphics and real-time combat, replacing the 2D isometric graphics and turn-based combat of previous installments. It was released worldwide on October 2008 from Microsoft Windows, PlayStation 3, and Xbox 360. The game is set within a post-apocalyptic open-world environment that encompasses a scaled region consisting of the ruins of Washington, D.C., and much of the countryside to the west of it, referred to as the Capital Wasteland. It takes place between Fallout's usual setting of a world that deviated into an alternate timeline thanks to the Atomic Age technology, which led to its devastation by a nuclear apocalypse in the year 2077, referred to as the Great War throughout the series. Caused by a major international conflict between the United States and China over natural resources and the last remaining supplies of untapped petroleum. The main story takes place in the year 2277, around 36 years after the events of Fallout 2, of which it is not a direct sequel. Players take control of an inhabitant of Vault 101, one of several underground shelters created before the Great War to protect around 1,000 humans from nuclear fallout, who is forced to venture out into the Capital Wasteland to find their father after he disappears from the vault under mysterious circumstances.
By the way, I have to interrupt. You know, all these vaults were basically plans by the U.S. government to fuck around with people.
Oh, yeah.
That's all they were good for.
Discovering the other vaults in Fallout games are some of the best side quests in Fallout games.
Yeah, that is entertaining.
There's one vault in which you find in which there were the overseers there said, fuck it, we're not going to do this to these people, and they actually did not suffer like the other ones did.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the ones where they pretty much grew plants that were sentient and took over the people and became plant people. They find themselves seeking to complete their father's work while fighting against the Enclave, the corrupt remnants of the former U.S. government that seeks to use it for their own purposes. The climax has the Vault Dweller killing himself, or Sarah Lyons, to fix the Garden of Eden creation kit, Gek for short, dying of radiation poisoning in the process. They could also allow it to explode. The introduction of the Broken Steel DLC creates a new choice with the ending, and that the Lone Wanderer can send one of their radiation-immune companions into the chamber to input the code.
That always bothered a lot of people in the game. It's sort of like, oh, here he is, why don't you use the Super Mutant? And when you ask the Super Mutant to do it, he gives this bullshit answer, no, I won't divert you from your destiny. What? And then in the past, he says, oh yeah, it's a good idea, I can do it.
Yeah. Furthermore, the game remains open-ended from this point onwards, with the Wanderer surviving the radiation they were subjected to, and recovering 2 weeks later to the news that the purifier is working well and supplying clean water to the people of the Wasteland, or has been having an adverse effect on life due to the introduction of the modified FEV. Sarah Lyons does not survive if sent into the chamber in the Broken Steel ending.
Which is, you know, Sarah Lyons, you find out that she was murdered, and then you have that stupid Maxon taking her place. It sets up Fallout 4.
Mm-hmm. And, lost my place. Fallout 3 was met with critical acclaim and received a number of Game of the Year awards, praising the game's open-ended gameplay and flexible character leveling system. It is considered to be one of the best games of all time. The NPD Group estimated that Fallout 3 sold over 610,000 units during its initial month of release in October 2008, performing better than Bethesda's previous game, The Elder Scrolls IV: Oblivion, which sold nearly 500,000 units in its first month. The game received post-launch support, with Bethesda releasing 5 downloadable add-ons, including the aforementioned Broken Steel, Operation Anchorage, The Pit, Point Lookout, and Mothership Zeta.
You know, Mothership Zeta and Operation Anchorage were crap. They were just basically just shooting galleries for you.
Mm-hmm.
I really loved The Pit because it had a lot of complex moral decisions in it. Surprising in a video game. Because the bad guys you thought were bad may not be all that bad, and the good guys you're with may not be all that good.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually some question on whether there'll be a Fallout 3 Anniversary Edition, because it seems like Bethesda's teasing it. I think maybe they thought it was going to be an announcement of Fallout 3 Anniversary, and it may have been just Fallout 76. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's something special that's released for Fallout 3 in next month.
Yeah. I would only want a remastered Fallout 3 if they implemented the improvements they made in Fallout New Vegas. Like, to where you could aim down the iron sights, modify guns, things like that. I really enjoy... Like, Fallout 3 is good. When you play Fallout New Vegas, I was so spoiled on Fallout 3 by what I played in New Vegas, and it's real hard to go back to Fallout 3 after playing New Vegas.
Scott, did you play Fallout 3?
Yes, I did. I didn't get too much farther than Megaton. I found the game tough because I think I got killed by some radioactive dogs at one point. And I tried to go find Three Dog, right? I guess his name. And I don't think I got to him.
Here's the thing. When you go to Three Dog, that's where you meet Sarah. You have to do some other stuff. You have to level up before you want to actually go after Three Dog.
Yeah.
And Three Dog's the best part of that game. One of the things I really liked about the game is that it rewarded you for taking a neutral stance. You know, it was hard because every time you did something bad, you had to do something good, or every time you did something good, you had to do something shitty. I found that you could game that by just doing all of your moral actions, just be good, and then just rob everybody and get negative karma for being a thief, too. So you could be a moral kleptomaniac.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that you actually got bonuses. There's one charisma-based perk that only worked if you had a neutral reputation. And also your achievements, you know, you got achievements for, you know, going down the good line, going down the bad line, and going down the middle line.
Yeah. Which, going down the middle is hard to do in that game. Sort of, anyways. If you kill people, then you have to do a lot of good, then you have to do a lot of bad, then you have to, like, do a little bit of good. It's a lot of fine-tuning.
Kind of seems hard to be good because there's a lot of stuff where it's questionable, like that one quest where you let the ghouls kill everyone. It's, you know, like, you just sort of feels like you can't really win.
No, and here's the thing, you know, I try to kill what's his name? The guy who Roy Phillips. He's the leader of three ghouls, right? So he, you know, you can convince everybody in Tenpenny, you know, the ghouls aren't so bad, let them in. So you let them in, and then Roy Phillips decides it's a good idea to kill all the humans in the Tenpenny Tower because he doesn't like the way they look. Which is a shame because his two followers are really nice people, you know, they're really nice people. So what I usually do is, you know, what I try to do is I did the psychotic prankster thing, which I put a mine in his back pocket when you first see him. He's outside the thing of Tenpenny. I snuck up, put a mine in his thing, killing him. But you still can't complete the mission because his second in charge will attack you anyway. Which is a bummer.
Yeah.
So. I usually just kill Roy, then just kill Alistair Tenpenny at the top of the tower. And you get positive thing for that.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, Three Dog calls you a scumbag. But what was I supposed to do?
I don't know. I guess I kind of just enjoy playing Dragon's Quest and going after the bad guy for once.
Yeah, I mean, Roy Phillips just decided he wants to take out the trash and then strip the humans and dump their bodies in the basement.
Mm.
Did you ever kill Three Dog?
No, I mean, I know you can, but I never felt like I needed to.
It makes the world real quiet.
Well, I always miss Three Dog the way he says that.
I would never kill Three Dog. I love Three Dog, but I am aware of what happens if you do.
I guess apparently some people do kill him.
Yes. I mean, like, there's no one on the radio station anymore, so it's there is another radio station, but it's like not even near as good as Three Dogs.
Yeah. Anyways, so yeah, it was a great game, but I'm starting up a new game of Fallout New Vegas, and I'm gonna put on God mode for myself because I just wanna go through the game, and you know I want to experience the DLC, which I never really got to do the first time around.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good stuff in there. The Divide is great. The Honest Hearts is great. And overall, well,
unlike Fallout 3, none of the DLC for New Vegas were clunkers. They were all pretty good.
Yeah. The one that has like the least amount to do with everything else in the regular world is probably the casino one. I'm trying to remember the name of the casino one.
Oh yeah, I know what one you're talking about.
But even that one, like, even with its own self-contained story, it's pretty interesting how it plays out, and it's pretty fun to do.
Yeah, that was the Dead Money DLC.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, so, in a way, it's pretty good that we didn't post last week's episode, because this week, there's a lot of news. And the first news is kind of depressing. Telltale employees left stunned by company closure, and this comes to us from Kotaku. Telltale Games employees were surprised when CEO Pete Howley announced that the closure of the company at a staff-wide meeting. One employee, a source told Kotaku, had been working until 3 a.m. the night before with no inkling that the studio was about to let them go. I'm going to do this over again. Telltale Games employees were surprised when CEO Pete Howley announced the closure of the company at a staff-wide meeting. One employee, a source told Kotaku, had been working until 3 a.m. the night before with no inkling that the studio was about to let them and over 200 other employees go, leaving behind a skeleton crew of about 25 to finish off work on a final project, which would be a Minecraft story mode, according to Variety. The timing was just one of the meeting's unwelcome surprises. The head of human resources dropped another bombshell to the audible shock of Telltale employees. There would be no severance. Those laid off were encouraged to begin applying for unemployment as soon as possible and were told their health benefits would run out at the end of the month, just 9 days later, according to the source, and to social media postings by ex-developers. They had 30 minutes to leave the building. The lack of severance, a detail that began circulating on Twitter shortly after the shutdown, was one of the bitterest details in a game studio collapse that has sparked outrage and sympathy among those who play and make games. Telltale has been around for more than a decade. It was in the midst of rolling on a new decade episode of its signature series about The Walking Dead, episode 2 of Supposed 4, planned for release tomorrow on December 25th. On a side note, there isn't going to be any more episodes. There's not going to be an episode 3. There's not going to be episode 4.
That's what I wanted to tell you about. There was a tweet that I saw about an hour ago or so on Twitter from Telltale Games saying that some independent sources have wanted to step up and express interest in helping to see the final season through the completion.
We'll see about that.
Yeah, we'll see, I guess.
The rationale for failing to pay out severance provided by Howley, according to Kotaku's source, was that there was a business closure rather than a partial layoff, like the 25% downsizing that hit the studio last November. A California law called the Kyle Warren Act requires employees a 60-day notice for mass layoffs, but allows some exceptions that could have applied to Telltale. That wasn't much consolation, however, to the people who had been working long days leading up to Friday. While the source knew that the company's future was in question, they never suspected the end was so close at hand. By the time they got back to their desks, their work Google accounts had already been disabled. According to now former Telltale character artist Brandon Chitsabenka, none of my sleepless nights or long hours or on weekends trying to ship a game on time got me severance today. Don't work overtime unless you're paid for it, y'all. Protect your health. Companies don't care about you. Another ex-employee said that they'd wish they'd taken more vacation time while they still had a job. All I want right now is to rest for a couple of days, they tweeted. But since we got no severance and our insurance expires at the end of the month, I don't have that luxury. Neither employee provided full further comment. Emily Grace Buck, a lead designer on several Telltale games, including its most recent one, The Walking Dead Final Season, spoke publicly about how long hours are customary at Telltale. It is true we usually worked 50 hours a week, sometimes 70 and 80. Weekends were often expected. We were constantly understaffed. Deadlines were ludicrously tight. Our schedule was so close we went from one crunch directly to another. Episode 2 of the final season was originally slated to release this week on September 25th, and Kotaku has already received a preview code for it. Telltale has not confirmed that the game will come out on the same schedule, but it seems likely according to sources reached at Kotaku. Melissa Hutchinson, a voice actor for Walking Dead heroine Clementine, wrote in a statement, "To my knowledge, they will release episode 2 and that will be it. I have not met with any of some of my best friends I have in this life, and that is priceless." By the way, she manages to have a baby voice for the first two game, or for the first game, and then a slightly older voice in the second one, and now she has more of a teenager voice. It's sort of like an evolution of her voice having to do for Clementine as she grows up.
That is cool.
This disconnect between the commitment of Telltale employees to the studio's grueling project deadlines and a sudden way in which the studio severed that relationship has inspired a renewed debate within the video game industry and gaming community about crunch, workers' rights, and unionization. Game Workers Unite, an activist organization that seeks to unionize the video game industry, put out a scathing letter on Saturday in response to the circumstances by which Telltale's employees were let go. According to the letter, they said, "The executives at Telltale are incompetent. They're exploitative. They knew this was coming and failed to warn anybody. Unionization can't fix Telltale after the fact, but it could have prevented so much of the damage to countless workers' lives by ensuring benefits like severance pay and health care that lasts from job to job." I find it interesting they don't mention, and maybe they did in the letter, about workers' hours, because we've all heard about the crunches. I mean, we all knew about L.A. Noire and Team Bondi and the hell that they went through.
Mm-hmm.
According to Buck, at least one employee had joined Telltale only a week before in the closure and relocated across the country to do so. Another was a foreign national in a country on a work visa who must now leave within a couple of days. While none of these laid off are being given severance, contract workers who weren't full-time won't even be able to collect unemployment. Telltale did not respond to multiple requests for comment. So, and that's the other thing. Can you imagine having to move across the country and say, "Oh, by the way, we're shutting down. Screw, sucks to be you."
That is pretty shitty.
Yeah. It's a real feel-bad story. Like, there are so many good Telltale games that out there, and, like, I guess because there are a couple that aren't that great, you had all these people that just, like, railed against Telltale and talked to, and were just like, "They deserve it." And it's like, what's wrong with you? I've had probably some of my most memorable moments have been Telltale game moments from either, like, Sam and Max, Wolf Among Us, Back to the Future, Tales from the Borderlands. There were so many good
games. Yeah, the finger gun battle in particular. I'd never seen a scene like that in my life in any video game, and and I've been playing for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that came as a, because I knew nothing about Tales of the Borderlands, except I got it free from Xbox Game Pass. And I tried it out, and, you know, while the story was good, it wasn't something that was mind-blowing. That one scene in episode, I think, was 3, just was like out of nowhere and just hilarious.
Yeah. It's real sad to see this era of basically story-based games come to an end, because Telltale did basically build an era of story-based games.
And it's ironic because they came about because LucasArts, dismantled their division. You know, when they were working for LucasArts and they did the first Sam & Max, and they formed the company just to be able to make more games.
Mm-hmm. And it's great to see that a lot of people know what's up and are picking up these guys and girls and giving, and there are a lot of them that are finding their way to work at other companies. And I think that that's important because, like, I feel like anyone wanting to write a good narrative would be insane not to pick up employees from Telltale.
And I hate to say this, but I don't give a rat's ass if the final season ever gets completed. you know, because what's happening to the employees, you can't undo.
Yeah. Like, even if they were going to do Wolf Among Us 2 and put it out at this point, that would be the most awkward thing, knowing how, knowing probably the BS that they'd have to pull to put that back together.
I was looking forward to Wolf Among Us Part 2, what's it called, Among Us 2 as well, because of the way the first game ended, you know, and when he's chasing after either it's Nerissa or Faith, you don't know, you know. The one thing that I'm really disappointed is there's not going to be a Batman Season 3, because that ended with either the Joker as a vigilante or Joker as a villain, you know, and I really wanted to see how that story was going to play out. But now we'll never know.
That is sad when that happens.
But, you know, I know a certain one of us is a big fan of the Minecraft story, you know, games. And that, they just kept on pumping those games out. I mean, it's like, you thought it was only going to be a 5-game. Nope, we're at, releasing 6, 7, 8, 9 episodes, you know? So at least Netflix is stepping up and having that go forward.
Yeah. Well, as far as, like, I can only hope that everyone, that most if not everyone at Telltale lands on their feet somewhere, because, I mean, obviously the industry knows the value of these people, knows the value of the work that they put in there, and hopefully that wherever they go, they find better working conditions, because that sounded nightmarish, the way people are talking about it. Some of the crunch and, like, the lack of severance and all that stuff just sounds... I can't even imagine not having my job one day, not having the next, and not having any sort of safety net as a result.
You know, and it's easy to forget that Telltale has had a tremendous influence. Remember, before Telltale, adventure games were considered dead, you know? No one was making an adventure game, and Telltale decided, you know, we're going to make adventure games. And they did, and people found out, oh, wait a minute, people do want to play adventure games.
Yes. I mean, God of War was one of the most highest-selling games this year. Spider-Man is fixing to be another one. There have been all sorts of good games this year that were just single-player, story-based. It was a resurgence in JRPGs this year. I mean, Scott knows.
Yeah, Dragon's Quest is story-based, and it has a huge story going on.
Yeah, but I'm talking about pure adventure games in which it's basically just a puzzle game, you know? Because here's the thing, you know, I don't know if you'd have, say, Professor Layton without the big success of Telltale games.
That's true. I mean, the Professor Layton is very much its own thing, but I agree. I think that
it's an adventure game. I mean, all adventure games have puzzles. That one just had overt puzzles.
Yeah. And I mean,
those levels made by level 7 though, so I think they have a lot of story based games or adventure games.
One of the funniest things that I saw in the last couple of days was that people were making the argument that that the closure of Telltale means that story-based games aren't sustainable anymore. And literally, like, hours after people were making that argument, Capcom announces that they're going to be releasing the entire Phoenix Wright trilogy, which is nothing but story.
Well, also remember, we have Life is Strange 2 coming, and that's going to be select hotcakes.
I think... What was that one part where you said that someone wrote a letter saying that
the unionization people, you know, workers unite.
Yeah, I think they're right that there is incompetence there, because you can make story games and have them be sustainable. Because I mean, Pillars of Eternity, you have 2 games out now for that from Obsidian. Not to mention Tyranny as well, which didn't get kickstarted. I think they just made that off the profits of.
It reminds me of Canon Films, because here's the thing with I think Telltale may have overextended themselves, like Canon Films did. Like Canon Films is doing good with their little B movies, but then they wanted they decided they were going to make Superman 4 and they're going to make Masters of the Universe. You know, the big budget films that real, quote unquote, real studios did, and they just bankrupt them themselves. I mean, I think no one would have shed a tear if Telltale just said, you know, we're just going to make one game for this year, you know, and not to try and, you know, grab every single license that's out there. We're going to get Back to the Future. We're going to get Jurassic Park. We're going to get, you know, we're going to get Batman, you know, all that stuff. You know, it's fine, but, you know, you got to pace yourself.
Yeah. Got to pace yourself and make quality over quantity.
And I'm not saying they're not quality. It's just that they put too much on their plate.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have to understand, you know, while adventure games, you know, they'll sell, they're not Call of Duty. You're not going to get, you know, $1 billion for doing another Walking Dead game.
Yeah,
you know,
that,
you got to know how much, you know, I think they overestimated how much an adventure game will get.
There's a video series called Extra Credit where they were able to get some statistical information from Steam based on player data, games played, and they noticed that, like, in the top 10 games, I think 7 of them were shooting games, and none were adventure games. Adventure games were, like, low down on there, but they were still played.
And yeah, well, a lot of adventure games get Kickstarter-backed, like Broken Age. I don't know how much of that. And also, see, here's the thing with adventure games. Telltale also, you know, sells their games on multiple, you know, distribution services. They also sell it on not only Steam, but through their own service. So we'll see. But like I said, you know, there are niche stuff, you know, and there's a good portion of people who do want adventure games, and they will buy them to play them. I mean, I get offered, you know, review codes for really small adventure games, you know. What's her name? Coot. Damn. Cootalot?
I don't know that one. I'm
trying to remember her name. Sir Cootalot. It's about this girl, who has adventures. You know, it's, the artwork is, you know, basically on the level of Order of the Stick, but a lot of people love that game, but it doesn't require a lot of people to keep it sustainable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I do watch Extra Credits, but I prefer Extra History. It's a lot funnier. Mm-hmm. I don't like the new voice. I prefer the old guy who had a higher pitched voice. The new guy is fine, but I prefer the older guy. The old guy who used to do it.
Yeah, Dan, I think he's the old guy.
Dan, yeah. The new guy is okay, but Dan had that vocal quality that just added that extra bit of sarcasm without having sarcasm.
Yeah.
I think they still make good points, but, you know, the sound of his voice is fine. It's not grating, so it's fine, and he still comes
I always
up
thought... I always thought it was actually a regular voice that went through a a masking thing, because he did not sound like a real voice. It sounded like someone putting a high pitched filter on someone's voice.
Some people have very unique voices, I guess.
I know. I just say I thought I really did think it was a filtered voice, but it's not, because it was so cartoonish, you know, in that friendly way.
Maybe he's just a friendly guy.
Yeah, I know, I'm just saying, but it was so video game and cartoonish, you know, his voice. I really thought it was a filter. Anyways, we're going to have some lighter news now that's not as depressing. Go ahead, TJ.
Swiss soccer fans temporarily stop game to protest esports. Soccer fans in Switzerland delayed a match on Sunday to protest esports in an unusual way, according to the Associated Press. The fans reportedly threw tennis balls and game controllers onto the field, forcing the referee to stop the game between Young Boys and FC Basel for 2 minutes while everything was cleared away. The Young Boy protesters then held up a giant banner with a pause button symbol, while Basel fans also raised up their own signs supporting the protest. One of the banners read, "Scheiß Esports," which roughly translates to, "Esports are shit." European soccer clubs are increasingly getting involved in esports leagues. While Young Boys doesn't have any skin in professional gaming yet, Basel has its own FIFA team. The global esports economy is expected to grow by 38% to 905.6 million this year, according to market intelligence company Newzoo. While North America remains the largest market, Western Europe is the second largest region in terms of revenue, and it's expected to make $169 million this year.
That kind of shocks me. I would have thought it was Asia that was either one or two. I mean, they have the best players. I would have always assumed that they have, you know, they make the most money out of it.
I can say something to that. China's got.
Well, I know that's why you're reading this article, because you're with oh, damn, I forgot the name of the people.
Twin Galaxies. The ones everybody hates. Western Europe, more than any other region, is characterized by localized esports ecosystems that operate next to regional tournaments and leagues, Nuzu said. While international leagues are very popular, local esports organizers have done extremely well over the past few years. Some noticeable examples are the ESWC in France, Gfinity in the UK, and LVP in Spain. As audiences across countries are culturally diverse, many sponsors, media companies, and investors that operate on a local level are looking for esports initiatives to match their marketing strategy.
I do have to mention, this might be a part of the fact that a lot of real soccer teams have esports versions of themselves.
You know, there's always going to be those people that are like, video games ain't athletics, and then chug their beer and slam it on the ground. But at the same time, in the same breath, how mad do you have to be about video games to interrupt actual sports to be mad about virtual sports? That seems like kind of counterproductive.
It does. It seems like a special kind of level of anger and angst that just isn't necessary. I mean, good lord. I don't know.
Here's the thing, there was a recent announcement that there'll be another wave of European soccer teams heading into esports. And here's the thing. These soccer teams are getting into esports. Now, these are real sports teams. It's like if the Yankees decided they're going to have a rotisserie team, right? So I think they have this annoyance at these people encroaching onto real sports. But, you know, these soccer teams see where the money is, you know, and they say, you know, we're going to get a piece of that pie.
Yeah, and it's not pretty much confined to soccer. I mean,
I'm just saying, because here's the thing, you know, the French soccer team Paris Saint-Germain announced their League of Legends roster. So right. you have a soccer team getting into League of Legends, for instance.
It's the same in the
and
US.
You have Danish soccer teams getting into CS:GO.
Yeah, it's the same in the US. You've got a bunch of NBA teams. There's the Golden Knights it's the Golden State Warriors that sponsor a team that is into League of Legends.
You called them the Golden Knights.
I think the team is called the Golden Knights.
Okay, I'm just saying, but the Golden State Warriors are the name of the basketball team.
Right. But the team itself is, I think, called the Golden Knights or something like that. But, you've got these NBA teams that are sponsoring League of Legends teams. They're sponsoring Rainbow Six Siege teams. They're of course sponsoring NBA 2K, league teams. And then you've got Madden, you've got NFL doing the same thing with Madden.
Well, the NHL is doing it too. I mean, Gary Bettman recently talked about how they're opening up their own esports league.
And people want to gatekeep. People will always try to gatekeep. I mean, video game nerds do it. Sports nerds do it. Everybody does it. They'll try to gatekeep as to what belongs in their thing and what doesn't belong in their thing. And unfortunately, people want to say that your passion isn't correct. So, get out of my thing.
I remember the first time they had esports on ESPN was a couple of years ago. People complained. I mean, but, you know, I wonder, and no one complained when Injustice 2 competition was on ESPN. And, you know, here's the thing. I stopped to watch, you know, Injustice 2 on ESPN because A, you know, it's fun to watch. And also I'm attached to DC Heroes, but, you know, I just wanted to see what the commentators were like and all that stuff, having them explain to, you know, the neophytes of how this game works. And, you know, I know that, there are some Dota channels. When they're covering the Dota channels, there's always one newbie channel in which the commentators explain why this is happening, you know, why they did this and what impact it had on the game like that, you know?
Yeah. And, I mean, like, esports isn't going away. I don't know what these people think that they're accomplishing by doing what they're doing, but esports is definitely not going anywhere. It's only going to continue to grow because plenty of people want to do it. And hey, guess what? You don't have to take a 200-pound dude slide tackling through your shins to play FIFA 19.
There are some 200-pound dudes who play esports, though.
Mm-hmm.
And 300-pound dudes, and 400-pound dudes. See, I'm making a fat joke.
Really? Couldn't tell.
Actually, no, most of the esports players that I've ever seen have been really, if anything, rail thin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gotta put some pounds on you, kid.
I mean, you play until 5 o'clock in the morning not eating anything because you're focusing on the game.
But yeah, I mean, it's just another thing, you know? And one of the things that about esports is that it really is global. I mean, but when you have competitions, you know, they're always going to be international and everybody's going to be watching internationally. It's one of the few sports in which, you know, I mean, the internet is a vector of this, you know? I mean, Twitch almost runs on League of Legends, Dota, and now PUBG in viewers because everybody around the world wants to watch them.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody's a soccer fan.
Yeah.
Oh, not everybody. Everybody except for the United States.
So, I mean, that was interesting that those people decided to interrupt their favorite game in order to tell people not to enjoy another game.
Like protesting, what's it called? New Coke. I mean, here's the thing, you know, it's almost $1 billion per year. Get used to it. It's sort of like people complain about video games from movies, you know? But the thing is that video games have surpassed movies in terms of yearly revenue.
I mean, if I was going to protest, like, say, a pet shelter that kills animals, I wouldn't do it by slingshotting kittens at their door.
No, it'd probably squeak toys. We're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Brian Fargo will try to buy back Interplay if the Bard's Tale 4 sells well enough. This is from Destructoid. Most crowdfunding ventures incentivized by upping development efforts, new modes, console ports, that sort of thing. Fargo's going to try to buy the studio he co-founded in the early 80s. Fargo says that he'll try to purchase Interplay if Bard's Tale 4 sells 2 million PC copies in its first 18 months on the market. The Bard's Tale 4 has already been successfully crowdfunded to the tune of 1.5 million and change, and it's set to release tomorrow, September 18th. And it's, you know, already released by this recording. When you hear this recording, it's already released. It was developed by InXile, the company Fargo founded in 2002 after leaving Interplay. To be completely fair, Interplay is no longer the attractive property it once was. In the 80s and 90s, Interplay developed and published some of the most popular names in role-playing games. Fallout, Bard's Tale, Baldur's Gate, and Descent were all linked to Interplay. 2 years ago, financial issues caused Interplay to try selling all its video game properties. It's tough to tell what Interplay might be worth today because it's not all that forward-facing and relevant anymore. Its Twitter profile says its company behind Free Space, MDK, Earthward Gem, and more great games. See, I feel like he's already doing fine making a new company with InXile and making a new name. Going and getting this one, I don't think is going to change anything.
Well, it's a name, you know. It's sort of like Infogrames buying the Atari, you know. They don't really give about the country. They don't really give a crap about the company and what it contests. They just want the name Atari.
But it's not going to be the same Atari. Price? Just like Vivendi resurrected Sierra, it's not the same Sierra. It's different people.
And I think I'm pretty sure that. Oh no, I'm thinking of a different. I was thinking Earthworm Jim. I thought maybe Team 17. No, that's just Worms. I wonder how Chris Roberts feels because Free Space was one of his babies. You know, that was one of the great space sims. And MDK, it's been a long time since we heard that game's name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Earthworm Jim is literally the 90s. I mean, it started in 1991 and ended in 1999.
I mean, it would be nice if buying Interplay meant that they could make Baldur's Gate games, but I don't think that that's what that means at all.
Yeah, a lot of the things they have now are with other places, and they're probably not going to sell those back.
Well, who owns Descent? I mean, that was the original Make You Vomit game. Imagine doing Descent with VR. Don't eat anything before playing.
No kidding.
For those of you who don't know, Descent was a shooter, but you were inside a ship, and it went in all directions. So there was a lot of stomach-turning movements that you had to make.
Yeah.
Now, Barcel 4 is getting mixed reviews right now. It's basically a 3 out of 5 type game.
Yeah, they had a day one patch, which was like 4.9 gigs.
Yeah, so people are complaining about other stuff, like you can't respec.
Which
is bad. And the graphics are mediocre, although I can't say it was a Kickstarter game, it was a crowdfunded game. Because Barcel 4 was done on Fig.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, they already have their pre-sales. It'll be interesting to see how many sales they make post-release.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, I haven't played it yet. I'm going to, because this is one of the games I backed. Actually, most of the stuff I've backed, I've gotten now. So, it's, I'm going to have to sit down and play them and see how they came out. I mean, the graphics, they should have seen that all the way through. I mean, that's one of the nice things about these crowdfunded games is you get to see a very transparent view of the development of these games. And so you shouldn't be that surprised by what they release. You know,
the other thing is that another complaint is that it's linear, which is odd for a Bard's Tale game. But then again, you know, so long as it's good, you know, I can stand linear.
Yeah.
But yeah, they've already released two patches.
Oh, wow. It's two of them. Okay.
One of them is a small patch. So
okay.
But it's getting mixed reviews. I mean, it has a lot of people. It's one of those divisive games. I mean, the reviews I've seen on Steam is either glowing praise or this is crap.
it is odd to see that kind of thing. You see a 5-star review right next to a 1-star review, and it's like, how can they both be right? It just doesn't make sense.
But on the other hand, you know what? That just tells me it's to your taste. You know, it's either the type of game you're going to really love, or it's going to kind of, you know, or you're not going to get with it, you know. I mean, I played all three of the Barcel games, you know, and I missed the album cover games. You know, Barcel 1 through 3, Earl Weaver Baseball, Pinball Construction Set, Adventure Construction Set, Racing Destruction Set, Master of the Lamps, what else? EOS, Earth Orbit Station. There are so many great games. The album cover games, the album sleeve games, were Electronic Arts at its finest. So,
So I think, I mean, I don't know if they've made anywhere near enough the 2 million yet. It's probably still way too early to tell.
I don't know if they're ever going to make that.
Yeah.
And it's not a tragedy if he's not able to buy, Interplay.
Right.
But it is an intriguing concept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think more than anything, it's about the name more than having any of the IPs back.
Besides which, Interplay had to sell all of his properties anyway, so. And, you know, to be honest, I like the sound of Telltale. I mean, I like the sound of Interplay better than In Exile.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Rez Creator's musical reimagining of Tetris launches in November. This comes from VG2047. Tetris Effect, the long-awaited project from Rez and Luminous producer Tetsuya Mizuguchi, finally has a release date. The game is revealed at E3 2018 and will launch later this year. While the core puzzle mechanics remain the same, music has a far greater emphasis. Each action will have a corresponding impact on the in-game visuals and audio, allowing for a more hypnotic and meditative experience. Mizuguchi also debuted a zone system where players can freeze time, drop blocks without pressure, and clear extra lines with ease, which is basically the Zen system from Bejeweled. You know, there's no way to lose. You're just going to keep going on and on and on and on and on. According to Polygon, Mizuguchi has been wanting to develop a Tetris game for years, but the license was controlled by Electronic Arts. After the release of Luminous in 2004, he pitched a concept to the Tetris company, with production starting in 2012. Tetris Effects launches on November 9, 2018 for PlayStation 4 and will include PSVR support. And by the way, if you're doing a Tetris game and you're developing it for 6 years, wow, he must really be doing something special with the music for that game.
Yeah. I mean, guy behind Rez, guy behind the games that he's done, that dude throws 110% into making it a visual and aural experience. Those games are beautiful. They're basically like, I mean, they're not horribly different from like Windows Media Player effects when you put on a song, but at the same time, just like the distance that he goes to make the rhythm and the sound match the game itself is really interesting, and I wonder if how that's going to affect Tetris Effects.
You know, the only thing I can compare it to is Every Extend Extra.
Yeah.
Which also does it. And that's by someone else. That's Kanta Matsushisa. Matsushisa. No, Kanta Matsuhisa. Ah, jeez. I'm stumbling over the Japanese name, but you know, it's not Mizuguchi. And, you know, the fact is that you can bet your bottom dollar it's going to be on Switch and Xbox One next year, in a year.
Yeah.
It has, you know, which is fine. You know, it's worth waiting for, but I know that you won't really want to trip on the VR version.
I feel like it's going to be a really, really good time. Like, to the point where it's going to be my VR game this year. Like, I haven't dusted it. There's really hasn't been anything to get me to dust off the old headset outside of Moss earlier this year. But
why do I get the impression this is a sort of game with a VR support that's going to require a little bit of weed to enjoy?
I mean, I feel like I'll enjoy it without the weed, but that would most certainly enhance.
This is just the game that you need that just demands that you space out.
Yeah.
With or without a chemical support. I mean, that's what Rez was. I mean, Luminous to a lesser extent, you know, Luminous wasn't that for me, but Rez was. And, you know, you can tell Luminous was just him trying to do Tetris without breaking any copyrights.
Yeah.
I think so. Interesting.
Yeah. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. So, yeah, I mean, it's still a bummer, you know. And even if they complete the Walking Dead final season, you know, I think this reminded everybody about the dangers of pre-ordering something, you know, going for a season pass. Because, you know, there's a good chance that you only get the first two chapters. And, you know, it just reminds me of, Half-Life 2, Episode 3. Makes me wonder if Clementine is going to get together with Alex Vance and start a support group.
Yeah.
Yeah, there'll never be a Half-Life 3.
Poor AJ, we're never going to find out what happens to him. Or maybe we will. We just won't be able to play it. We'll have someone doing doing fiction, but reversing all the sexes of the characters. So now Clementine is now just Clem with Andrea Jr.
Yeah.
And she talks about how Lola used to help her and what a prick Kenita was. So, anyways, but let me ask you a question, Scott. Are you still looking forward to the Minecraft story mode?
Sure, if there's another chapter that they have.
Oh, this is definitely good because Netflix is backing it, you know?
Yeah. So then that money will make it happen. I mean, I enjoyed the first two, and hopefully the people that made those two will be finishing this, or at least equal to the quality that they've had. But yeah, I'll definitely play it. And
How did the last episode end with a cliffhanger too?
I guess if you want to consider it that way, I don't. You can consider it the end of the event, or the end. Basically, you have the choice of leaving with, I forgot her name now, but you can leave the city that you've built with this character, your friend that you've made since the first game, or you can stay and let her go. So, you know, either way, you could see that as an ending.
Sort of like the ending to The Walk, Wolf Among Us, because the last option you have is either chase after or just let her go.
Yeah.
I always just chase after her because it was so nice seeing him make that startle realization and start to move towards her, and then game over.
Well, I mean, then you could just imagine them going on adventures and being happy or whatever.
Well, or you know, maybe they'll start with entirely new characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, last question, and this will be the question of the week. What Telltale game do you most want to see, or would most wanted to see? I think you already gave your answer, TJ.
Yeah, it was definitely Wolf Among Us 2, just because that was some of the most fun I had with a Telltale game. The slow build-up to, like, everybody
becoming the big bad wolf and taking out Bloody Mary.
Yeah, everybody getting on Big B's nerves and him making him reveal just a little bit of a time, and the final actually pull back of the curtain on what the big bad wolf actually is was so good. And I wanted to see how they handled that in season two and how they handled just like.
I'll just say three words: huff and puff.
Mm-hmm. So I'm really disappointed.
Let me ask you a question: How did you deal with the Crooked Man?
I left.
There's three options. You could either outright kill him, you could send him into the witching well, or you could turn him into a bird.
I turned him into a bird and left him at the mercy of the people.
Okay, I tossed him in the witching well. Because here's the thing about the witching well, it isn't in the game, but if you know anything about the lore, everybody thinks it's a fate worse than death, but actually you go into another dimension, an underground dimension. So I was satisfied with just making everybody think he suffered a fate worse than death while not actually killing him.
Yeah, I thought it was, for my personal take, it was better to just leave him to the people and let them dole out their justice on him.
By the way, during that trial, everybody backed me up because of the way I behaved. I was a good guy, Big B.
I made somebody angry, and I can't remember how.
Well,
you know what? I didn't make the right choices to keep Toad and his kid from getting sent to the farm. And
they get sent to the farm no matter what.
Oh, well, then I don't feel so bad.
I mean, I remember giving him the money, and he's just watching him skip happily away with the money you give him, even though he's going to waste it, you know? How about you, Scott, aside from, you know, Minecraft, because that's coming out regardless?
Well, I don't know. I guess another Back to the Future.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
They did leave with that weird cliffhanger.
It was
odd. With three Martys coming to tell them. Was it three or two Martys?
It was several. It was getting out of hand.
I think it was three Martys were begging you for help. All of them contradicting each other.
Yeah.
And my favorite thing is that Doc and Marty just shrug and walk away.
Yeah, they're like, okay. We're done with paradoxes. We're going to go do something else.
Yeah, I remember, what's it called? We're going to pretend we didn't see that.
Yeah.
It was nice having Michael J. Fox actually speak a character.
Yeah.
He played his ancestor, the one who in the movies pees on Marty, but all grown up.
Yeah. That one, yes.
As for me, I want Batman Season 3, damn it. I want to see how that ends up, because they diverted so much from DC Comics' version of Batman. It's a real alternate universe. And I wanted to see where they were taking it. Did you play Batman at all, TJ?
I wasn't able to get to that one.
Which one?
Batman.
Oh, okay. I mean, if you play it, you won't be disappointed. I mean, one thing, you get to choose the way Batman takes out villains and all that stuff, you know, and you have the, what's it called, a little morality meter. And then when you get to season two, you start coming upon Amanda Waller and all the shit that she brings. And thankfully, she's more akin to the Amanda Waller from the comics, the original Amanda Waller, and not from the movie, who decides it's a good idea just to shoot all her underlings just to keep a secret. In the game, Amanda Waller is very protective of her people. So, you know, she isn't derailed as much. But she does look like the Viola Davis version in Suicide Squad. At least she's overweight. I can't stand skinny, sexy Amanda Waller. That's an abomination. Anyways, we will see you next week. Oh, wait a minute, sorry. Anyways, you can find me on Twitter, at Jonah Falcon.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
I am at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.
Okay, don't go anywhere just yet. I'm turning off the recording. And I am going to check for myself. Make sure this friggin' thing recorded. No, it didn't. Oh. Okay, what I want you to do is I want you to, both of you send me your files.
Okay.
And I'm going to see if this records anyway after I log you off.
Okay. We good then?
I think so.
Yeah, I think we're good.